Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The founder of Zupan's Markets dies in a motorcycle crash. Oregon reports their first mosquitoes with West Nile virus, and an Oklahoma cow gives birth to a two-headed calf.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, cover your loins, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, August 31st, 2011. The founder of Zupan's Markets died Tuesday following a crash in which his motorcycle was hit head-on by a motorist on Northeast Marine Drive. John Zupan, 66, was westbound near Northeast 138th Avenue, and when he was struck by a car driven by Edie Porfirio Reynosa Ramirez, 32. Police said the 1998 Honda Civic was speeding in the eastbound lane of Northeast Marine Drive, driving erratically and passing other vehicles. Reynoso Ramirez was booked into Multnomah County Jail and faces allegations of assault in the second degree, failure to perform the duties of a driver, DUII, and reckless driving. Zupan worked up the ranks in Fred Meyer's produce department before setting out on his own, operating Zim's in Gresham and later running stores under the Thriftway and Food Pavilion names. According to a 2007 Oregonian story on Zupan's Markets, John Zupan's son, Mike, now oversees the business while Zupan oversaw the company's real estate.
So there really was a Mr. Zupan.
There was.
That's fantastic. I mean,
not so much now.
Well, no, probably, it's still fantastic that there was. Don't mourn that he's dead, Don. Give celebration that he lived. And gave us a place with huge cinnamon rolls. And really just, I mean, cookies like the size of a hubcap.
When I first moved here, I was living in West Lynn. And so the Zupan's Thriftway out there was the only store that I could really shop at. And it was quite a delight. It was a marvel. It had an excellent bakery, and the produce department was awesome.
It's an emporium of culinary wonder.
And I would often see 7-foot-tall black men and realize, oh, I must live near Trailblazers.
Hmm. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, August 31st, 2011. Don't forget to stay tuned this hour when you will get to hear Science on the March at the bottom of the hour about 25 minutes from now. Later on this hour, you'll have entertainment news as well. And then next hour, give or take, you'll have the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. This hour, however, can be gotten later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. And you can also take it with you on your mobile device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. Yes, indeed. Here's Don Taylor at the desk, Denews.
If you would be so kind as to hand me the stuff on the printer, I will read this story.
All right. And Keelan would like to remind everybody we are now a mere 2 days away from Don's Black Talk Friday.
Yes.
It's coming up this Friday here at Legion of Doom.
That was just a little teaser, my saying that I went grocery shopping with Trailblazers.
Yeah, the sound. And then this other story we'll do next. Oh, wait, there's one more. Yeah, there we go. Wait, hold on. Is that it? I just have to make that sound. Yeah. All right.
Seriously, the thing is, I lived in West Lynn, and in the whole West Lynn, Lake Oswego area, Portland is a ridiculously white city to begin with.
You've explained to me, Don.
But then I'm like, I moved to West Lynn, and every time I would see a black person in the West Lynn, Lake Oswego area, they were like 7 feet tall. And it took a while for me to figure out why that was, because one time you go, wow, real tall guy. The second time you go, that's another really tall guy. And then after a while you start going, how come? Wait a minute. And then finally someone said, I think the Trailblazers live out, you know, in like Lake Oswego and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. It was kind of like when I moved to North Portland and I kept seeing midgets and guys who were missing half of their legs. Why were there so many midgets in North Portland? No idea. But at least there was some explanation for the tall black gentleman and in West Lynn and Lake Oswego.
I didn't require an explanation. I'm fine. Doesn't matter to me.
Just explain.
I'm fine, Don the Greek.
Several cases of the West Nile virus have been discovered right here in Oregon, just as many plan to head out into the woods for some Labor Day camping.
Oh.
According to health officials, mosquitoes carrying the virus have been detected in the Jordan Valley of Malheur County in eastern Oregon. I'm probably pronouncing Malheur incorrectly. It's probably Malheur or something like that. Symptoms of the West Nile virus can vary from none at all to those similar to the flu, like headache, nausea, or fever. To avoid mosquito bites, health officials say to stay indoors during dawn and dusk. Standing in water can also draw mosquitoes, which is considered their breeding ground. I don't think it's considered their breeding ground. It actually is their breeding ground. That's where they breed, is water.
Well, maybe they could breed also in maple syrup or
Vizo.
In your ears.
Yeah. Using bug repellent containing DEET, oil of lemon eucalyptus, or picaridin is also
for what?
Picaridin.
Are you doing like a parakeet thing over there?
Picaridin. Picaridin. I don't know. I've never seen this word before in my life.
Okay.
Picaridin. Apparently it's something that will repel bugs. I've never seen that word before, ever.
And it's called what?
Picaridin.
Is that the... I wonder how many times I can make you do that. Is that the... do you suppose that's the generic or chemical name for whatever DEET is?
Well, no, because they said DEET, comma, oil of lemon eucalyptus, or picaridin.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Somebody says, I wonder if they could breed in seafoam. Anything can breed in seafoam, sir.
No.
And so this is all true. So what am I supposed to do with this information?
You're supposed to...
Stay inside? Or
stay inside at dawn and at dusk, and don't stand around in water.
Really?
And then douse yourself with chemicals.
Well, I already do all of those things.
Or just don't go to the woods.
I pretty much stay away from water. I douse myself inside and out, by the way, with chemicals. That's not just an external thing with me. I live it. It's then I flush myself, and then I really just every one of my cells is packed with chemicals. And then what's the other thing? Stay inside. Done.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm all good. Yeah. And then is it just mock those who are felled by this dread disease?
That, and when someone comes home from being out in the woods, if they have mosquito bites,
cut off their heads.
Make sure you tell. Well, oh, I was just gonna. I was
oh,
just gonna.
Sorry.
I was just gonna frighten
no,
them
don't.
By telling them about the West Nile virus.
Ixnay on the utke. Don't. You don't want to do that. Apparently, I jumped the gun there.
It's not like that monkey virus in Dead Alive. They have to cut off your own arm, or else you know you turn into a zombie.
Apparently, picaridin is a DEET alternative created by the Bayer Corporation.
Oh.
Funny thing is, or troubling, depending on who you are, all the links on their website are broken. Everyone. Sure, there's nothing amiss there. Cover yourself in picaridin. Just drink it right out of the bottle. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Okay. Federal officials are assessing the damage left by Hurricane Irene throughout the U.S. East Coast. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack...
What?
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack.
Picaridin.
Says many crops were seriously damaged in North Carolina.
It's obvious that tobacco, cotton, corn, and to a certain extent soybean producers are impacted by this storm in a very significant way.
Oh my God, not tobacco. Vilsack shared his findings during a news conference with the Secretary of Homeland Security and North Carolina's governor in the city of Manteo.
I've not seen the kind of flooding and damage to crops that I saw briefly today. And if this is representative of what North Carolina has suffered, it's obviously a fairly significant blow to North Carolina agriculture.
Well, here's the question everybody wants to ask, and that I will ask as a proxy for the people, for the good listeners of Portland and beyond. Are there drug crops that are going to be damaged somehow? Is this going to impair the production or distribution of some sort of narcotic, some opiate that the people crave?
Well, the meth trees aren't going to be blossoming on time this year, Ma.
Because we've got, I figure we've got the weed thing taken care of, you know, on the West Coast. I mean, that, you know, like we're all over. I mean, if that, you know, even if you, I don't think they grow that there, but I think, you know, even if they did, we can sort of step up production here. They got the tobacco. And probably, I would imagine, rot gut booze of some kind. But it's not like they don't, like heroin
the
wells
heroin
or something.
Bushes.
Whatever it is you have to dig. I just, you know, because there's, because that's a huge part of the economy.
The Vicodin vines aren't going to flower on time this year.
I mean, fine, the tulips or whatever are not going to come in, but no one really cares about that because it doesn't really affect anybody. We're talking about people's jobs. Right. So it's important to understand all facets of the current economic structure and whether any drug other than nicotine comes out of... Hey, here's a question I have.
Too much water is bad for the Xanax gourds.
I don't know what this means.
Okay.
Someone says... Heroin grows like potatoes. That's potatoes with the quail spelling, by the way. Heroin, mashed, cooked. Nicotine, naturally in tobacco or not?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why they use it.
Then why are they, well, then why is the cigarette industry always getting... like such crap over the nicotine levels in cigarettes.
I think they can.
Can they blame God?
Well, I think they can actually add some nicotine to it. They can extract nicotine and then add more.
Oh, they can amp it up.
Yeah, to make them even
make it like the Jolt Cola of plants.
Right.
Okay. All right.
TriMet is cracking down on fare cheaters. Just as fares are going up, fare inspectors have their pens and ticket books ready and are using them far more than they have in the past.
I like the idea of there being fare cheaters.
Yes. Because that seems to be an oxymoron. At the Gateway Transit Center, inspectors boarded trains and asked to see tickets. Anyone without one had to leave the train.
Was some amusing lad there to respond in like a faux German voice and say like, "Yes, you may see my papers," and right. Then look at his friends to be assured that it was funny?
Yeah.
Okay.
Supervisor Gary Radford said, "We've been educating people since 1986. After 25 years of education, I think they should have it by now. TriMet doesn't make a secret of the fact you have to pay a fare."
Seriously, at this point, like, if they ought to just snap off your teeth with pliers. I mean, if they catch you. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm in favor of that happening as such. I'm just saying, like, you can't. It seems like you have no right to complain if they bust you for not paying.
No.
I mean, pay, don't pay, but it seems like you can't plead ignorance on that. Because
no.
Fareless Square is only like a postage stamp at this point.
No, yeah, you get on the max. It's like getting on the bus. You're pretty much aware that there is a fare that is due.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think virtually everyone who does not pay their fare on TriMet basically knows they're taking a gamble. The only reason they're doing it is because they know the odds are very good that they'll get away
with
it.
But if they catch you, then it's like you just got to take it like a man.
Yeah,
don't bellyache about it. You're making me pay.
And apparently an awful lot of people take that gamble because in about 45 minutes on Tuesday, Radford gave one written warning and five tickets.
Wait, what?
In about 45 minutes of checking tickets.
Right.
At the Gateway Transit Center, he gave one written warning and five tickets.
Oh, yeah. So and that's just like, is that where they just come up to people randomly and go like, "Show me your thing"?
Yeah. Where's your ticket?
Yeah. And the guy goes, "Oh, here." And then if they don't have it, then they... Right. And I wonder how many of those people, "Well, I set it down. I gave it to a guy. I lost it. It's in my shoe. Mm-hmm. It was taken away by a parrot or whatever."
In the first 2 weeks of August, inspectors gave nearly 800 more citations than they did during the same two-week period last year. The crackdown is catching a lot of people by surprise. And some are clearly upset when they get a ticket.
Oh, seriously. I want you to bring those people to me. I want those people right here so I can ask them what in the name of Christ they are upset about. Seriously, what could you possibly... I mean, I guess you don't have to be happy about it.
No.
But upset implies surprise. Like you weren't
outrage, anger.
It's like
this will not stand.
I guess if it's like you get a speeding ticket or something, I mean, I guess you can say, well, I wasn't really expecting to get a ticket. But a lot of times that's a thing you can do without realizing it. You know, you can be exceeding the speed limit or, you know, maybe doing a little bit of a California stop without really thinking it all the way through. If you just walk past the thing that says, like, you must pay if you're walking, it costs money to ride this ride, and, like, you just don't, and then a guy tickets you, what are you possibly upset about?
Yeah.
All right. Well, whatever.
So, they do mention, though, for those who do pay for their tickets, it's good to see TriMet enforcing the rules.
Yeah. Well.
And the fares go up this week. An adult all-zone and two-zone single fares will go up 5 cents. Monthly passes increase by $4 for adults and $1 for riders 7 to 14. The cost of a 14-day pass is also going up. I don't know what they actually cost because, you know, I'm an elitist and I don't actually ride public transportation. But TriMet has also said they're expanding service on some of their busier routes.
See, I view it as, like, I don't ride the bus all that often, but I do ride the, I will ride the MAX. I'll ride the light rail, like, to the airport or back from the airport. Or occasionally if I'm going to some sort of music extravaganza at the Rose Garden, I'll do that. Because the alternative is you just have to sit there and just wait for, like, 3 hours for a parking lot full of drunks to leave. And then you know you're going to get pulled over on the way home because they're pulling every third car over on the way home from the Rose Garden. And also, you're just going to be stuck in gridlock and traffic. The great thing about the MAX is, doesn't matter how much traffic there is. I mean, they stop it for the train. The train just goes on through. The train gets a first crack at that. And I mean, you know, it's full of lunatics, but if you're just coming from the Rose Garden, that was full of lunatics. So I view that as actually being a step above driving, because then it's like I have my man at the front driving me home via this long cylindrical vehicle of the quasi-future.
My view of the MAX train is also colored by the fact that, with the exception of one time, every time I've been on it, I was really, really drunk. It was one of those situations.
So you're one of those.
Of being out drunk, drinking with some people, and somebody going, let's just take the train! And I'm like, okay.
So you're one of those people that when I'm telling this and I say, of course there's the occasional belligerent drunk who spews all over themselves. And
there was no spewing, but I will admit I might have been belligerent.
Shirt all covered with food particles for some reason. You are that element of the story.
That would be me, indeed.
Right. Okay, well, fair enough.
A hay truck fire closed I-205 northbound near Stafford Road and snarled traffic on both I-5 and 205 for nearly 10 hours yesterday. Northbound lanes were closed while firefighters tried to control the fire around noon. Crews had removed the bales and extinguished them individually. Firefighting efforts were hampered by a lack of access to water, you know, on the freeway. The driver of the hay truck escaped unharmed. I-205 northbound was finally reopened around 9:30 p.m. last night.
Somewhere in my, I don't think it really exists anymore, but there was at one point a photograph of me when I was a small child attempting to buck a bale of hay. And I say that for no reason. I don't really have anything funny to say about the story itself. So I just thought I would put everybody, I thought I would give everybody something to smile wryly at by picturing me trying to lift a bale of hay.
For a while I was saving stories when I was working at this newspaper and even doing this. I would occasionally put stories aside that into my things that I would never have read in the paper or heard on the nightly news when I lived in Los Angeles. And generally stories about possums and things like hay truck fire closes freeway.
Yeah. No, I could, that is a... That
Mama
is,
escapes. These were things that I never had to actually deal with when I...
That's a region-specific kind of story. Did you see there was a second stolen goat story the other day?
No.
It's like two in a week.
People are just stealing goats, right? Maybe it's a serial goat stealer.
Is it the same goat every time? I didn't think we had that many goats here. How many goats, you know?
There are a lot of goats.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, not maybe in the city, you know, proper, but if you get out into your surrounding regions, there are actually a lot of people who have goats.
Oh, I see mainly chickens and the occasional peacock where I live. It's goats must be a past 82nd kind
in
of
fact,
a thing.
I know a couple of people who have goats. They decided he retired from, he got out of the army or whatever it was he was in, and they bought a little farm and they have goats. And they sell goat milk and they have goats. Patrick and I have talked about that we thought it would be nice to have a little goat farm and I could make cheese.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't it seem like at one point, at least one of the stations covering this goat story has got to be able to work on like a goatsy joke?
I think so.
Seems like, you know, KGW maybe could just like, you know, just slide that in when nobody's like Stephanie Strickland, just when nobody's really paying attention to the copy, she just slides that right on in there.
Yes.
Seems like a thing she would do.
Stephanie Strickland would definitely do that.
And then she would look at the camera with that devilish gleam in her eye.
And then just smile brightly and everyone would say, oh, she's so cute. She couldn't possibly have meant what she just said.
She's such a little news cutie. Yes. She couldn't possibly be referring to anus stretching.
No.
And yet.
Not her.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, not that she has. I mean, I don't
know. Not that we know of.
I mean, not publicly.
Could have happened.
Maybe in private. Yeah.
A community festival in Hoquiam, Washington, is attracting attention with a T-shirt mocking Osama bin Laden. Logging remains an important part of Grays Harbor County, and the Loggers Play Day Festival celebrates that heritage every September. And every year, a special shirt is made.
In where, Washington?
Hoquiam.
How are you pleased to spell?
H-O-Q-U-I-A-M. It can be pronounced Hoquiam, is all I know, because everything's pronounced wrong around here. But
what the hell is that?
Hoquiam. I really don't know, but it's a logging community, and they have
what isn't.
And they have every year. They're known for being edgy. Their T-shirts every year have like mocked environmentalists and hippies.
I think that requires being known first of all. And yeah. I'm from Washington, and I don't know where that is.
I'm sure one of their commemorative shirts one year probably had something with a guy killing a spotted owl.
By the way, don't even get me started. There was a point in growing up where like. I would say one in three shirts owned and or worn by any male member of my family over the age of 12 had a spotted owl. It was always like it looked like some sort of crude drawing that like your dad. It looked like the kind of drawing that your dad used to hang up in his workshop that like, you know, that like traveling salesmen Xeroxed and then handed off at like, you know, with shops where they made stuff, you know, just like a joke, you know, sort of a, would be like a, like what some of that fax or copy lore that Jan Brunvand's always talking about, where it's a zany scatological drawing of an Indian and a blonde woman.
Yes.
But it was that same style of drawing, and it was, you know, and it, like every guy in my family owned or was given for Christmas or for any number of holidays a shirt that had a spotted owl on it. Often there would be some sort of like a popular one was the Campbell's soup can, except it was a spotted owl soup. There was one that was a 101 ways to cook spotted owl. That's the totality of the joke there, is it's a recipe book that says that on the front.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, anyway, so I'm loading up this picture so you can get a look at it. This year's T-shirt.
I've seen the shirt, by the way.
Yeah. This year it's a logger, and he has Osama bin Laden strapped to a log.
It doesn't make any sense, is the thing about the shirt. It's not even that it's offensive, because I don't care.
No, it's just
not funny. It fails to be funny. On every level, it fails.
Yeah, and he's the logger is dunking the log with
Osama. It says Osama bin Laden.
And then it says Osama bin Laden.
Which doesn't even really, it's not a rhyme. It doesn't even count as a pun. The most you could say about that is it's a sort of assonance, sort of in a vowel sense. But it doesn't really.
Where's Osama bin? Osama bin Laden.
Oh, does it ask the question and then the answer?
Well, I don't know. That's what I figured they might be getting at. But I might be giving them far more credit than you know. It's that whole thing where my brain tries to make sense of the joke, and so I kind of figure it must be like Osama's bin logging.
If we're having to add extra words to the shirt to make it funny, then I don't think it works.
Yeah, no, it doesn't say that, though. It just has Osama bin Laden on a tied to a log, and a logger is doing something to him, and it says Osama bin Laden. Anyway, organizers say they got the idea because their September 10th event is so close to the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and because bin Laden was killed by U.S. military forces in May.
Do they really need the note that September 10th is, quote, really close to September 11th?
They think Osama bin Laden is funny. Of course they have to explain it.
Here's the thing about that shirt. Why would you want to identify Osama bin Laden as a colleague? I mean, if you're in a logging community, why would you want to say that he is, in fact, a co-worker
of yours? What I took from it, the whole story that I got from the illustration and thing was that apparently Osama decided to go logging, and then a patriotic American logger captured him and tied him to a log, and then was going to, I guess, drown him slowly and painfully. And then they'd say, well, Osama bin Laden.
I find fault with the premise that Osama bin Laden would decide to go logging at any point.
But that's the only way it makes sense.
Most of the people I know who are loggers don't like to go logging.
Because otherwise, Osama bin Laden just makes no sense at all. So for the joke to work, Osama had to go logging at some point. In some fashion.
Maybe if he walked into a bar first.
Maybe. So the designer of the T-shirt, if you can call him that, Christian Burgess, said, bin Laden was buried in a wood product, and that's what sparked the idea for the shirt. And that's what we have him doing.
What do you mean he was buried in a wood product?
I don't know.
Did they mean wood? That's
yeah.
a wood product.
Yeah.
Also, didn't they just dump him off the side of a boat?
Maybe he was tied to a log when they dumped him off the side of the boat. Anyway, the town bills itself as the friendliest city, and a number of people, a resident of Aberdeen, so I guess this might be near Aberdeen.
Well, that explains it all right there.
Aberdeen resident Sharon Gabershack said, "I don't like the looks of it. If he wasn't on the front, it would be better."
Another resident, the Osama bin Laden shirt would be better if he was not on it
right.
in any way.
Another resident, Gene Ward, printed several T-shirts to say, "My Hoquiam is a hate-free zone."
You know, I do have to give them credit here because I'm looking at the shirt, which you can see at rickemerson.com, unless you're John and Gresham. You can see this at rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for August 31st. That's where you can see this. Now, I have to give them credit, though, for putting the apostrophe in the right place.
Yeah, there's that.
Loggers play day, and then they do, it is S apostrophe, so well done there.
Right.
And then also, I got to say this, they use the apostrophe correctly for login.
Mm-hmm.
So well done on the pronunciation. Yeah,
it's
the humor.
Grammatically or, it's not incorrect in that manner.
But then there's like some weird roided up logging guy, and yeah. then Osama, who looks more like Jesus than usual here, is tied to a log, and then,
And the loggers humping it or something. I don't know what the logger is actually doing.
It's very
with the
phallic.
Log.
And the mountains and trees in the background make it look as though the logger is like a winged
right.
black demon of some kind, or like yeah. a Danzig album cover.
So the fellow who designed the shirt said the money raised from it at $15 a piece is going towards college scholarships for local students. He says, "Clothing can be fun, clothing can be disgusting, clothing can be anything you want, but this piece of clothing, however you want to take it, is all for the positive for our kids."
Well, of course, it's for children.
It's for the kids.
I'm trying to think if we could come up with a better Osama bin Laden shirt. Hold on. Nothing really rhymes with Laden, though.
No, Baden.
Baden, Cotton, Dadden, Zadden.
Yeah, no, that's right. You do kind of a Johnny Rotten thing. Osama bin Rotten, and he looks like Johnny Rotten.
But then it's like is he rotting because again we buried him in a wood product?
Yes, there it is.
Or whatever,
yeah.
Or in the ocean or something.
Yeah.
We should have how about this? What if we just instead of this the shirt, what if we just had a contest the first one to bring us, because apparently we just kicked him out into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make it sort of a when you have to go locate the station sticker, which we have put underneath one of the chairs in the Rose Garden. You know, like if your seat has a Z100 sticker on the bottom of it, like you win a shirt, if someone can return to us then the enshrouded remains of Osama bin Laden, we will give you a Z100 sticker.
Yeah, there we go.
There you go.
But Osama bin Taden, and he's like drinking a lovely hot toddy.
Osama bin... Chaim. No, there's nothing rhymes with...
Osama bin Wadden.
Maybe I'm going about this wrong.
He's wadding something up.
What rhymes with bin? Osama Zin... Quinn.
Ooh, Osama Zin Laden, and it's a lovely wine.
Or it's Dave Zinn.
It's a lovely bottle of wine, yeah.
No, that doesn't work either.
Nah.
No, maybe this is just a joke that can't be...
No, I don't think so.
No. All right, well, whatever. I don't really care all that much, but you said this is by Aberdeen, and so therefore, I mean, I think everybody knows exactly what kind of people we're dealing with. I mean, it's... You know, I don't even really know where... I'm assuming I must have driven by this town hundreds of times in my life, but it apparently is small enough that it escaped notice. Maybe I was just speeding so I could get past Chehalis like as quickly as possible. I was just all excited to get to that town called Vader, which is awesome, yeah. by the way, and where they have cinnamon rolls that are just huge, like the size of a car. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our science.
All right. Osama bin... No, thought I had it. Here's your science on the march for...
Osama bin Cotton, and he's been fishing for cod.
Now, see, I think it's a variation on the existing shirt.
It could be a fish and chips place. No. Osama bin Cotton.
See, but then it's like he's just doing another Northwest-based profession, and then you're going to have Indians all up in your business about it. All right, here's your science on the march for Wednesday. Here it's at Legion News, as part of Cascadia.fm's sterling lineup of entertainments. We are brought to you every day by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. You can also call them if you like. It's 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. If when it comes to wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. Please do call them and congratulate them, first of all, on their one-year anniversary being a proud sponsor of Science on the March. And then ask them to... Yes?
Oh, just Robert Wagner on Twitter saying, listening to Don Taylor try to pronounce hoquiam.
Is that his
hoquiam? Apparently he knows how to pronounce it. No, he just spelled the word. I still don't know how I'm doing it. And then somebody says, well, and somebody says hoquiam, right? And then he says, correct. So it is. It's hoquiam.
But is it three syllables or two? Because we love to drop syllables and letters.
No, apparently it's three syllables with the accent on the first. So it's hoquiam.
Hoquiam. Yeah, no idea.
I wasn't too far off.
All right. Next, I'll teach you how to say Yahats so that the...
I will never get that one right.
All right. Because otherwise, the people there get all uppity with you about it.
It took me like a month and a half to figure out Chehalis.
All right. So. And the town that starts with a P?
Oh, Puyallup.
Oh, fail.
Oh, damn it.
Okay. Here's Don Taylor.
Oh, what did I do with my science? Oh, here it is. The body has a biological mechanism tailor-made to fend off infections from a bacteria responsible for many hospital-acquired diarrheal infections. Reporting online in the August 21st Nature Medicine, researchers at Case Western Reserve University and colleagues from other institutions showed that a compound called S-nitroglutathione can bind to toxins secreted by the microbe and neutralize them before they damage cells. Increased levels of this in the guts of mice protected them from bacteria that cause diarrhea.
Does it really say in the guts of mice?
Yes, actually, that is a technical medical term, is your gut.
The guts? All right.
Yeah, your gut. Obese but apparently healthy children 7 to 9 years old were twice as likely to be insulin resistant as were normal weight children their age, according to a team of scientists from U.S. universities. The scientists compared a range of features characterizing the blood, vascular health, and fat processing in 123 children. A whole host of pre-diabetes and pre-heart disease changes were evidenced in the obese youngsters. These children were also beginning to store fat outside of normal sites. The results highlight the importance of interventions to prevent and manage obesity very early in life, it says. How about perhaps the fact that they're overweight is because they're insulin resistant? And the fact that they're going to get diabetes later is because they're insulin. They're getting fat because they're insulin resistant. They don't get insulin resistant because they're fat. Jesus Christ.
Oh, you weren't really talking to me right then, were you?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay. Because anyway. I was just staring blankly into space.
All right. The Alaska Volcano Observatory has lowered the alert level for a remote Aleutian Islands volcano from watch to advisory. Satellite data over the past 2 weeks indicates that growth of the Cleveland Volcano Lava Dome has paused or stopped.
Is that where Fog Hat's going to be playing next week?
the Cleveland Volcano
Lava Dome! You get your money's worth in the first 10 minutes. The rest of the show is free!
U.S. Geological Survey scientist in charge John Power says the eruption appears to have been predominantly effusive rather than explosive.
Lava Dome!
And confined to the summit center. He likened it to an oozing pile of toothpaste.
It's like an oozing pile of toothpaste!
The alert level was raised in July after satellites detected persistent thermal anomalies. No? Okay. No significant ash emissions were detected. Cleveland Volcano is 940 miles southwest of Anchorage. The volcano's most recent significant eruption began in February 2001 and produced three explosive events.
Why is there a Cleveland volcano?
It's probably named
it's
after
like a park driveway, drive parkway thing. Why is there a Cleveland volcano in Alaska?
Named after after President Cleveland.
Maybe Grover Cleveland.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. I take it back.
Anyway,
hey, is Cleveland named after Cleveland?
I've always assumed so.
Okay.
Anyway, there were clouds as high as 39,000 feet.
But where?
At the Cleveland Volcano Lava Dome.
No, you got to give it one more with feeling
okay.
Here.
The Cleveland Volcano Lava Dome!
All right, there you go.
Okay.
Be announcing Molly Hatchet's stage entrance any day now.
A clever group of bottlenose dolphins in Australia has created its own combination tool that both captures fish and functions as a food bowl. Use of the tool, described in a Murdoch University press release, is called conching, and we actually have a picture of a dolphin doing such. Dolphins first trap small fish in large conch shells with their beaks. They then bring the shells to the surface and shake them. Like a strainer, this causes the water to drain out of the shell and sends the fish right into the dolphin's mouth. This isn't the first time dolphins have converted a natural item into a useful tool. There was a journal paper a few years ago describing how dolphins use sponges to protect their beaks and to help them with fishing. What's particularly interesting about this news is that the conching tool and technique appears to be spreading throughout the population of dolphins at Shark Bay, Australia. Scientists first observed dolphins engaging in these behaviors in 2007 and 2009. Now people are seeing dolphins conching all the time.
Is that like shrimping?
Well, they're just calling it conching, yes.
Okay. Also, it's conch.
Is it conk?
Yes, just conking? FYI.
Okay.
You don't get to talk while you're on the island for the rest of the book now.
All right. Damn it, Piggy. Murdoch Cetacean Research Center researcher Simon Allen was quoted as saying, in the last 4 months alone, the research team have seen and photographed the behavior no less than six times, possibly even seven. If, and this
possibly
is,
even seven.
Possibly.
What do you mean no fewer than six times, possibly even seven?
Mean definitely six, and maybe once the dolphin wasn't actually eating fish out of the conch. He was just playing with it.
Or like somebody just stuck it on his head while he was asleep, like for a goof.
Maybe.
Okay.
So I said, maybe we are witnessing the horizontal spread of this behavior. Then I would assume it spreads by an associate of a conking dolphin, closely observing the behavior and then imitating it. It's a tantalizing possibility that this behavior could spread before our very eyes over a field season or two, and that we could track that spread.
This is like the what they call the 100th monkey syndrome, which is the spread of new adaptations to an environment, or in some cases the use of tools from one section of an animal population to another, that happens in a very short period of time, et cetera, so on and so forth. But haven't they been using? I mean, this isn't all that interesting, right? Because aren't, like, sea otters, don't they, like, pick up rocks and, like, smash stuff with them?
They do, but, I mean, I guess the thing is that this is a situation where they saw it a couple of times a few years ago, and it looks like not only is it, like, a new behavior, some dolphin at some point realized, hey, if I trap a fish inside the shell and then shake out all the water and I can just use it like a, you know, like an oyster shooter and just shoot it right down my throat, and then some other dolphin went, you know, I think that's probably a good idea. And then another dolphin learned it, and then another dolphin learned it. It's like the thing with the monkeys and the money.
And then it all ends up in court, and there's a huge look and feel lawsuit over the entire thing.
Well, and then all the dolphins that use the shells, they look down on the dolphins that don't use the shells. They go, oh, I'm sorry, aren't you conking? Everyone else is conking.
I just want to know, why aren't we doing something about crows? I mean, really, that's, I think, the larger issue, is that crows are fashioning tools right now to use against us.
Yes.
I mean, literally now, probably outside your window, wherever you are. So that is, I think, if anything, the dolphins probably see it all coming. They see the crow apocalypse on the horizon, the crow apocalypse. They know that it's, I gotta trademark that today. They know that it's coming, and so they are fashioning crude weapons to defend against crows, who are probably busy making scuba gear or some crap. So I'm just saying.
I read another one of the stories today, by the way, about monkeys being taught to use money.
Yeah.
About these researchers.
Don't think about it.
Giving the captain monkeys these washers and teaching them to go to the monkey store.
Yes, and buy berries.
They could trade for, like, now do you want the orange slices or do you want the Jell-O cubes? The Jell-O cubes are on sale today for half off, and the monkey going, okay.
Yeah.
The monkey's immediately learning how to shop for bargains.
Yeah, those are the same monkeys that learned, like, the whole weird, they became risk averse because they taught the monkeys to gamble with these washers that were coins. And so they would, anyway, it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But it basically proves to you why the lottery works. And is this the same study that ended with the monkey prostitution?
If it did, they didn't mention it in this particular story. But yeah, they did the thing where they were saying, you know, you got to, This guy will give you an extra apple slice. Half the time, this guy won't give you an extra apple slice. And even though
it's the same, no,
it was the same amount, 50-50, they would gamble with the guy where they would occasionally get the extra one.
Yes, they learn to become risk averse.
Yeah. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. No, it'll terrify you. I mean, if anybody hasn't read that study, I encourage you to never read that study because it'll weird you out. Mm.
A team of about 150 engineers, scientists, astronauts, researchers, and students started work this week on the first of several deep space mission scenarios, part of an annual NASA field expedition called Desert Research and Technology Studies, or Desert RATS. I actually know a guy who, he's a science fiction writer, and he went to that last year, where they actually did a full simulated Mars landing out in the desert, where they had to live in a capsule and eat food and put on the suits and go out and take samples and stuff.
So not like a Mars landing of like a broken radio, like we have like a people though.
Yeah.
Because normally we're just sending a boombox there and then we smash it into the surface and it doesn't work.
Yeah. No. They will as part of like NASA will do, part of figuring out what needs to be done if we ever do this. And also a part of, like, helping researchers learn stuff. And they will send people, like, this guy's a science fiction writer as well. And they send them out, and they do experiments, and they actually live in the thing for, like, a week. And they have to put on, you know, the environment suit before they go outside. You know, and they're basically living in a capsule as if it had landed on Mars.
At the end, does Rod Serling reveal that they're really lost in space and the whole thing was them daydreaming about home?
They tried to get home and the world has just been overtaken by crows and monkeys.
I missed this earlier because I think we're all just incredibly high. Robert Wagner said about the back on the Osama bin Laden thing. He said, clearly Osama bin Noggin is your best bet. A picture of an intoxicated Osama holding a jug of spiked eggnog just in time for the holidays.
That could be a Christmas shirt.
And then he'd inadvertently, instead of jug, he had said hug of spiked eggnog.
Aww.
And he clarified by saying, I mean jug instead of spiked eggnog, not hug. Obviously, I'm in an affectionate mood. Perhaps it's because I'm listening to Don Butcher.
Aww.
Hokim. Or Hokwim.
Hokim. Robert Wagner just loves me no matter what I do.
No, it's true.
He likes me just the way I am, Rick Emerson.
It's true. You're the koala bear of the broadcasting world.
True. I'm show pony. So anyway, this NASA thing, staged from Black Point Lava Flow in the northern Arizona desert, the project is an opportunity to flesh out plans, test equipment, and practice techniques for a variety of proposed human space exploration missions. This year's campaign includes four asteroid mission scenarios reflecting NASA's shift from lunar exploration to a planned asteroid visit targeted for the mid-2020s. NASA's Mission Control Center is participating in this year's simulation, along with Europe's Space Research and Technology Center in Norway. A communications time lag, which simulates what astronauts and ground controllers would experience during an actual mission on an asteroid, is part of the exercise. Jeff Stone, the mission's operation director, said, 50 seconds does not sound like much, but it's a crazy long time when you're having a conversation. It takes a whole different mindset.
When you say they're having a conversation, what is the 50 seconds?
That's the 50-second time lapse that they're simulating how long it would take for messages to relay back and forth.
It's only 50 seconds?
Yeah, and that's what he says. It doesn't sound like much, but, you know, it can be, yeah.
Well, what the hell? Okay, seriously, if I'm on, like, Skype and Aaron Duran is, like, a mile from here, there's, like, we talk over each other after because there's, like, the second lag time. Mars is, you know, on Mars. And yet it's only, like, it's not much longer than that, relatively speaking. That makes no sense at all.
NASA obviously has better equipment than Skype.
Yeah, but
I'm just saying.
Well, okay. But how can that be? Skype is owned by Microsoft.
But what the hell?
Are you saying that Microsoft doesn't have top-notch communication software done?
Maybe they're holding back a little. Maybe they have it, but they're just not sharing it with us.
Also, they don't use radio signals. Fine, Mr.
Right.
Blow my argument with logic.
Technologies being tested in the 2011 Desert Rats mission include the Deep Space Habitat, which combines a NASA prototype space habitat with an inflatable student-built loft called the X-Hab. The habitat provides crew living and workspace. NASA's Space Exploration Vehicle, sans wheels, which were needed for last year's simulations for the surface of the moon, the vehicle could be transformed for asteroid exploration by mounting it on a flying platform. Robonaut 2/Centaur 2, mounted on a wheeled base called Centaur 2, NASA's Robonaut Tour robotic astronaut assistant has been reborn as R2C2, because he's on the Centaur Tour.
Robonaut! I'm sorry, I have to do that every time I say that.
The droid could be tasked to scout areas for potential crew visits or assist astronauts in spacewalks. And the extravehicular activity information system, which is a suite of prototype electronic devices to help with future spacewalks.
They're doing speaking of like a Mars, so when they do actual Mars stuff with, what is the new Mars rover? Curiosity. So they have you seen the thing that like they're going to use to land Curiosity on Mars?
Mm-mm.
It's awesome. Also, it lets you have lots of great, like, weird Jungian symbolic conversations about Curiosity is much heavier than Adventure, because I think Adventure was the last one we said. It was like Adventure, and then the one before that was like, I don't know, Intestinal Fortitude or something. But the new one is Curiosity, and Curiosity is much heavier. And so the whole thing of them just, like, using, I don't know, whatever, a parachute or just sponges or something to stop it from smashing itself to bits, which is what we seem to do with like one of every like three things that we send. So the way that they're landing it, it's kind of awesome. It's sort of space exploration as done by Rube Goldberg. So there's this huge thing that is going to drop into the atmosphere, sort of like the landing thing in Aliens, I think. And then it stops and it basically hovers. We're dropping this huge craft that will then fire these rockets and that will stop it like X, I don't know, hundreds of yards or whatever above the surface. And it will just kind of go and just idle and just hover there above the surface, sort of like a helicopter. And then, you know, open a door.
I swear to God I saw this in a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
It's going to hover above the surface. A door is going to open at the bottom. And then it's going to kind of go and just like lower the actual rover at the end of like cables, which it will then sever, and it'll drop it basically. It'll lower it down like a marionette on cables. Let go, it'll detach the cables, the rover will take off on itself, and then the little hovering thing goes, and it angles, fires the rockets, and then like shoots itself off to the left, like into the side of a mountain. So that it can't just be hanging around causing mischief.
Huh.
Like blows itself up by flinging itself like into a hill or
wow.
something. It's weird though. So it just like hovers there long enough for like Marvin the Martian or whoever to like, you know, come by and watch it, like open up the thing and then go, whoa, and just lower something down on cable. It's like a 9-step process that seems so painfully jerry-rigged, but is like awesome. Because they couldn't, because the thing was too heavy, and they were like, if they landed it the way they landed all the others, it would just hit the ground and explode into pieces. And so they're like, well, if only we could find a way to just gently lower it onto the ground. So they're going to make this whole separate thing whose only job is to hover there long enough to, like, winch the thing down like a well bucket. It's awesome.
That's all the science.
There you go. That's all the science there is. There's no more. We're out of science. Brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squiresElectric. Or you can call 503-252-1609. All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Entertainment news coming up, well, theoretically now, but, I mean, we got to put at least one story between that and this, or it's just nonstop fanfare.
Oh, yeah.
Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today, Hick Watch, also Democracy in the March. Also, do you have the story about the guy and the cable and the fire?
Oh, indeed, I do.
Awesome. All right, so we'll get to that.
I think I do.
You didn't. I put it in the Dropbox.
Well,
you couldn't see it, and so I printed it out.
The guy and the cable and the...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I was going to actually read that after this next one.
Oh, we should do that next hour.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. We won't share it with you.
Well, I'm just saying.
Okay.
We're already, I mean, you
all
know,
right.
we've already given the people so much today.
That's true.
That it's 12:46.
Okay. And believe me, I got lots of stuff here. Okay. When Jimmy Robinson of Porham, Oklahoma, walked into his herd of cattle to count heads, he was in for a shock. Surprise, 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 said Robinson. It's just hard to believe it's here. He found a live two-headed calf.
Really?
Laying in his field. And we have a picture of it.
Oh, is that's the other thing?
Yeah.
Oh, this is that thing that looks like a two-headed calf. I wonder what that was.
Robinson said the polycephalic bull calf was born to one of his older cows and has taken food when hand-fed. Caden Robinson, Jimmy's grandson, likes playing with the four-eyed calf. And there is, if you actually go do a little search online for two-headed calf,
Obama,
there's a video on one of the local news networks there of the kid playing with the calf.
Now, I only see two eyes. Well, I guess maybe there's one on either side that's too far back to see.
Right.
All right.
Caden, the grandson, says, it's cool, and I've never seen one in my life.
He should take it to school and terrify the other children and say he's a wizard. Don't go to any of those.
I made this.
Seriously, stay far away from those African villages we've had stories about lately. Seriously, man.
They should have just kept it secret, and he could take it to 4-H Club and say he made it.
He should totally do a thing of, like, he should take a regular calf and then just, like, do some sort of Shazam, like, behind a curtain, and then, behold! And then, like, he transmogrified it or something.
Indeed. According to a new analysis of the 2010 U.S.
Census... Wait, are we done talking about the two-headed calf?
Oh, you want to talk more about that? That's all the story. There's a calf. It has two heads. We got a picture of it. It's freaky looking.
I mean, do both heads, like, eat?
Apparently, yeah. It's alive.
That's
and it seems
so
to be
great.
Working and thinking and doing stuff.
Generally one brain, speaking, you think?
Generally speaking, two-headed calves don't seem to last very long, though. So I don't think you should be letting this kid play with it.
Well,
kid's going to be sad.
Well, I suppose. But I mean, you know, but what a great story to, what a great thing to mount on your wall later after it's dead.
But that's the thing, yeah, they said, I don't know if it I think it can eat out of either side. And it has four eyes, and the eyes all seem to work. That's just weird.
No, I'm seriously, it's like the, you know, like if whenever it is that the calf sort of ambles off to God. I mean, that's a thing that you really do have to get stuffed, you know, or just mount the head like in your living room, you know, or just over the kitchen table or something.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right.
Yeah, that's Ugh.
Except it wasn't. What was the story we had? Why did they burn that guy a couple weeks ago? What were they saying he transformed into? No, he had a magical penis.
Yeah, he had a magical invisible penis.
His wife
was terrifying people by turning into a snail.
A talking snail.
Yeah, a talking snail.
All right, okay, that's right. Not a two-headed anything.
No.
Just a regular snail that happened to talk.
Right.
And was married to a man with a magical penis.
Yes.
All right.
And then everyone said, we must burn them with fire.
One of the lesser-known Aesop's fables.
So, you'll be interested to know that there is one city in the state of Tennessee that turns out it has a higher percentage of same-sex couples than any other city in the state of Tennessee. The name of that city?
Gay.
Johnson City.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, that's actually funnier than gay, 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 which isn't really funny, just me saying gay three times.
Well, that is kind of funny. The Williams Institute on Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity Law and Public Policy recently ranked Johnson City fifth in the state for same-sex couples. The group, which is affiliated with the UCLA School of Law, only ranked Nashville, Knoxville, Shelbyville, and Red Bank ahead of Johnson City. But they do have a higher percentage. They have 240 same-sex couples, or 8.88 per 1,000 households. The number is higher than the state average of 6.5 per 1,000 households. East Tennessee State University psychologist and PFLAG member Carrie Holland said, "I think larger communities tend to draw a more diverse population, and that's what's happening here. I think it's also because of the university. Universities are traditionally very welcoming environments. I think it's because it's called Johnson City."
Welcome to Schlongtown.
If I was gay and I lived in Tennessee, I would so move to Johnson City.
If you were gay, you'd be moving to Johnson City every night, Don.
I would be. Believe me. Yeah.
Passing through, yes.
Dana Sia lives in Johnson City with a girlfriend. She's not convinced the ranking means there are more gay and lesbian couples in Johnson City. Instead, she says it probably just means gays and lesbians feel more comfortable coming out if they live in Johnson City.
Well, yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Every day is a parade in Johnson City.
Let's do our entertainment news.
All right, here is your entertainment news for... You're sure it's not Thursday?
I know. It's only Tuesday. I haven't been sleeping.
That's also not right.
Is it not Tuesday? It's Wednesday. Oh, my God.
Okay. Here's your entertainment news, such as it is, for Wednesday here at Legion of News.
Justin Bieber and his Ferrari are both fine after a fender bender in Los Angeles. Los Angeles police officer Gregory Beck said that the 17-year-old singer was involved in a very minor collision Tuesday afternoon in LA's Studio City. The officer said no one was injured or cited, and no police report was taken. There was no visible damage to Bieber's car or to the Honda Civic.
Where did this happen?
Studio City.
It must suck to live in Studio City and be named Gregory Beck.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah. Bieber recently appeared at MTV's Video Music Awards, where he won Best Male Video for his song, You Smile. Atlanta-based rapper T.I. has been released 1 month early from a federal prison where he was serving a weapons violation sentence. Bureau of Prisons spokesman Chris Burke said the artist, whose real name is Clifford Harris, was released at 7:29 a.m. Central Time from the Forest City low-security prison in Arkansas. The rapper was sentenced to 11 months in prison in October for breaking his federal probation after he was arrested in L.A. on drug charges. He was set to be released at the end of September, but prison authorities released him a month early. Why is he called T.I. if his name is Clifford Harris? What does T.I. stand for?
Are you asking me?
Yes. You know about musical things and people.
I know about hip-hop.
You know about all the hip-hop that the kids are listening to?
I don't know.
Okay. An adult film performer has tested positive for HIV, renewing some to call for mandatory condom use on film sets. Los Angeles Times reporter Molly Hennessy Fisk said there are requirements for HIV testing.
Hold on a second. What cut is this?
Porn.
Oh, yeah. I guess I could have sussed that out.
Performers have to test every 30 days, and they have to be cleared to perform. The Free Speech Coalition recently launched a new website that is sort of a database of not test results, but it does say whether a performer is cleared to perform or not.
Fisk says a porn industry trade group is keeping tabs on the situation.
The Free Speech Coalition has said that they are notifying people who may have been exposed and sort of managing that testing process.
Well, that's weird. Well, why would they... I mean, what is the point of announcing the thing? I'm not saying they should say who it was, but what is the point of even releasing the story if they're not... In other words, if they're taking care of it, like, internally, they're not, you know, they're contacting everybody who's sort of, you know, involved. Mm-hmm. Why are they even making it a story?
That I don't know.
It just seems weird. It seems like if they're not going to release the name, which I understand, and they're going to contact everybody, it seems like why would they go out of their way to advertise that happened? Unless they're trying to look responsible, which doesn't really matter because, like, no one's opinion of the porn industry is ever going to be changed one way or the other. People think what they think about the porn industry, and that's that.
Well, you know, anybody could have leaked that information to the media and then the spokespeople for the porn industry have to come out and then address the issue.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, you know, there are an awful lot of people.
Was it leaked, though, or did they?
I don't know, but I'm just saying I could definitely imagine that there are a fair number of people who would want to, anybody working at a clinic or a medical place or something who would want it, who has some kind of a grudge against porn.
And then I guess maybe, and then so they don't want that to happen, so they preemptively say it so that everybody sort of is on the deal. Yeah. All right.
An autopsy conducted on an actor from the HBO series Tremé and whose body was pulled from the Mississippi River in New Orleans found that he drowned. 44-year-old Michael Showers played a police officer in the series. Authorities say his body was found in the river on Wednesday after it was spotted by the captain of the riverboat Natchez. John Gagliano, chief investigator for the Orleans Parish Coroner's Office, said Friday there was no trauma to Showers' body. He said results from toxicology tests for drugs and alcohol...
I think you mean there was no trauma to the body.
Results from toxicology tests for drugs and alcohol will take about 3 weeks. Showers also acted in The Vampire Diaries, Traffic, and the new action thriller Columbiana.
I'm trying to method act his way into that Jeff Buckley biopic just didn't work out.
No.
I can say that because I don't watch Tremé, so it doesn't bother me.
Blues musician David Honeyboy Edwards, whose roots stretched back to blues legend Robert Johnson, has died. Longtime manager Michael Frank said Edwards died of congestive heart failure Monday morning in his Chicago apartment. He was 96. Born 1915 in Shaw, Mississippi, Edwards left home at age 14 to travel with blues man Big Joe Williams. His father, a guitarist and violinist, bought his son a guitar from a plantation worker. Edwards played with a number of noted musicians, including Johnson, Howlin' Wolf, Little Walter, and Muddy Waters.
God damn, I saw a documentary, I saw some documentary about it was like an American Roots sort of a blues thing. It was like 20 years ago, and they had, he was, Honeyboy, what was his name?
Honeyboy Edwards.
Edwards, and he seemed like older than dirt then. And it's one of those guys where you think, well, I'm glad they got the camera on him, because how, he's probably going to, you know, how long could this guy possibly last? And that was like 20 years ago, and he's still, good for him.
Yeah.
I like guys who just hold on to the very end, just refuse to go.
Yeah, among his hits were Long Tall Woman Blues, Gamblin' Man, and Just Like Jesse James. He won a 2008 Grammy for a traditional blues album, so he actually won a Grammy Award like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, he's 93.
Well, sort of John Lee Hooker. John Lee Hooker was like 91 or 92, and he's like, here I am again, winning another Grammy. Thank you, I'm awesome.
He also got a Lifetime Achievement Grammy Award last year.
Excellent.
So, Robert Downey Jr. and his wife, Susan, are expecting their first child together. A representative for the 46-year-old actor confirmed the report Wednesday on People Magazine's website. The baby is due early next year. The couple were married in 2005. They met on the set of the horrible, horrible, horrible film Gothica, which Susan co-produced.
Is that that great film Gothica? No, I'm sorry.
No,
it's
the
not.
Terrible
okay.
movie Gothica that right. Robert Downey Jr. had to make because nobody else would hire him. So he had to make a bad movie with Halle Berry. Downey has a teenage son named Indio with ex-wife Deborah Falconer. And let's see. What else have we got? There's so much to share. How much time do we get? Oh, yeah.
We have like 2 minutes.
Ed O'Neill's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame is appropriately placed in front of a DSW shoe store on Hollywood Boulevard. O'Neill earned his fame playing shoe salesman Al Bundy on the sitcom Married with Children. The Emmy-nominated star of Modern Family received his sidewalk honor Tuesday in a ceremony featuring his two TV wives, Sophie Vergara of ABC's Modern Family and Katie Sagal from Married with Children. O'Neill called the honor overwhelming and thanked fans and then said, just think, somewhere in this world a baby girl is being born and she's going to be my next wife.
Wow. Good for him.
Well, Seagal is 11 years his junior and Sophie Vergara is 26 years his junior.
Okay.
So the 65-year-old O'Neill attended Ohio University in Youngstown State. He was signed by the Pittsburgh Steelers but cut in training camp and he taught social studies before he became an actor.
We have like 39 seconds. Okay.
The man who was Ed Helms' stunt double in The Hangover 2 is suing Warner Brothers, claiming he was badly injured during a high-speed stunt gone wrong for the movie last year in Bangkok. The stuntman, Scott McLean, filed a lawsuit in California federal court on Tuesday, claiming he was participating in a stunt where he had to lean out of a window of a moving track when something went wrong. According to McLean, another car involved in the stunt skidded out and crashed, resulting in a major collision. He claims the stunt required precision and timing, but after the stunt was underway, the stunt coordinator changed the timing, which screwed up everything. His reps told The Hollywood Reporter that he suffered likely permanent brain and physical injuries, including ongoing seizures, speech impediments, physical impediments, and brain trauma.
He should just—he did a press conference where he barks a lot, like randomly for no reason,
and makes then a just, noise like that woman in that NPR circuit.
Yeah, and then flings his own waste at the audience.
That's a bad habit for a stuntman.
All right,
you don't want that.
Go out on that. Excellent. Fantastic. With that, we bring the curtain down on this, another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Igoe, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. We will see you next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Don't forget, you can get this program via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at our home at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. Thank you for joining us. We will see you again tomorrow. Have a safe and satisfying Wednesday. Thank you. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.